listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, Taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor. Really glad to have Michael Oliver with me again as we round out 2017. And that website that you should all go to, consider subscribing to Michael's letter. It's olivermsa.com, olivermsa.com. Welcome, Michael.
Hi, Jay. Good to be back.
Always good to have you back. I just have to ask you about Bitcoin. Its exponential rise seems to be thwarted, at least for the time being. What are your thoughts on Bitcoin?
Well, our thoughts were, and we were very fortunate, the Wall Street Journal even picked up on them. Before the futures started trading, which was last week, we said, wait for the futures to start trading, because not so much technically speaking, because Bitcoin doesn't have that much history, and it's hard for us to do technical analysis of something that basically is it's an infant. Okay, it doesn't even have DNA yet. But I remembered when gold was legalized. It had had a multi-year bull market in the early 70s from $35. It was reaching 200 as it was legalized in the U.S. in 1975. And as soon as it was legalized, it topped. And it suffered a year and a half downside and about a 50% correction before it then reasserted itself into a massive bull market. But sure enough, last week, Bitcoin... we took a cash chart from, I think, Bitfinex was the most liquid of the cash exchanges. There's a lot of quotes out there. And then we stuck on the Chicago Merck price action last week. Well, Chicago Merck took over where Bitfinex had ended in just short of 20,000, shot up to, I think, 20,600, something like that, and collapsed to 12,200. It closed out the week, I think, at 14,000 or so. So, but the, from high to the low of the week last week was over 40% drop.
Wow.
So it couldn't have been more, sort of, so to speak, reflective of gold, but even then more so. Why? Because there was a venue for people who might want to short it in a way that they could feel comfortable, know it's a mechanism that works, it's a surefire thing, you know, the futures market, and so forth. So that brought in the other side, the guys who said, listen, this has gone too far. Now the question is what happens in the future, and I don't know. There's not a lot of technical history for us to develop trend behavior off of, to study the momentum of. Anything we do would be short-term, pretty much. And I suspect that in the long run it will survive. One or more of them will survive as, you know, valid alternatives to fiat currencies. And that therefore it's a wake-up call, so to speak, that especially the young generation, you know, the millennials, have just discovered that you don't have to be a government to have a money a medium of exchange. So, which is a rude awareness for a lot of people, especially the central bankers. So if these things take root over the next few years in terms of percentage of global transactions that occur with cryptocurrencies, they become a threat to... the monopoly currencies. So that'd be interesting.
Yeah, it sure will be. I mean, I'm sure one of the things that Bitcoin can do is move wealth, move money around, and do it with less friction. And so you eliminate the middleman, and I can understand why the bankers might be nervous, wanting to get a piece of that action, if not own it completely. But we shall hope that they're not successful. At least that's my editorial viewpoint. Well, that's interesting that this is almost the same kind of decline percentage-wise as gold had back in, you know, when it shot up to 850. Yeah, but it exactly. And gold was more protracted, as although it was, as I recall very vividly, a very fast, rapid smackdown, too, from 850. I mean, it was just at 850 only very briefly. So, interesting,
that's
though, because...
That's the next bull market. Yeah. I was talking about the one that peaked in 75 at $200, and it came down to 103. That was but it peaked when futures were legalized, and that made sense, you know, if you go back and look at it. But meanwhile, gold's doing good this week.
Yeah. I think we're gonna see you for the third time this year, very possibly, Michael. You called that within a whisker. You came within a whisker of your line in the sand two times before, bounced off, and never had to go neutral. And it looks like maybe that's gonna happen again.
Yeah, I think this week sort of put its elbow up over the shoulder of the curb stone, and I think that the sell-off you saw over the last month or so is over. The issue now is, well, what does it do now, and at what speed? And we'll be doing a lot of work this weekend, especially because we get a lot of new numbers. It's the end of the year, it's the end of the quarter, mm-hmm. a lot of numbers change, and we'll do a lot of reassessing of some of the major markets, including gold. Though I suspect gold is the most obvious level now is a price-based level. It's around 1350. Anybody with a crayon and a ruler can plot a monthly price chart or a weekly going back years. So you go back 3 or 4 years and you'll find there's a gradual line of resistance that comes through such that if you'll close a week out about 1350, you've cleared it. And then the price crowd will wake up and say, hey, it's a bull market. the momentum crowd, or our folks, knew it was a bull market in early 2016. But it's done its typical congestion stuff after its first major surge off of its bear lows. It went into a lot of volatile congestion, and it shook a lot of people out. And that's good, because that means that the market's leaner and meaner. It doesn't have so many weak longs in it now.
Yeah, good.
Hopefully a lot of folks got stopped out.
Good entry point, probably, for those that aren't in it.
Makes it healthier.
Yeah, indeed. Well, you're going to be having a lot of new material coming out, as you say, the end of the year, end of the quarter, etc., and it's OliverMSA.com, folks, to learn more and catch up with Michael and subscribe to his letter. I'm looking forward, Michael, to talking to you next week as well about some of these major trends, your plate tectonics, so to speak, how you see the markets evolving as we go into the new year. And I guess that's a good time to reflect on it after you have all the annual numbers, mm-hmm. right?
Yes, so and the numbers change.
So you've been calling for a bull market in, all year, and last year even, for commodities. You've seen the turning point, and copper right now looks particularly strong. I saw it was $3.28 a pound before we went on the air. How do you see copper? And how do you see Freeport-McMoRan? You've recently done some work on Freeport-McMoRan.
Well, we like Freeport in the 14s. I think it's now 18-something. In 2 weeks, it did more on the upside than the S&P did all year.
Wow.
Anyway, that's what the nature of overly suppressed markets, which is true with a lot of commodities. Now, copper fits in the category of with oil, where the percent recovery from the lows has been substantial already. Not that it can't go a lot further, but this percent recovery has been very strong. We turned bullish on copper at $2.24 in November last year. And like you said, it's dollar above there now, which is a nice move. But next year, I think that the real big power move is going to come out of the grains.
Yeah.
Corn, beans, and wheat. And I think by power move, I mean the initial breakout, and it's not far away from levels right now that if you're there in 2018 in soybeans, corn, and wheat, we've got specific numbers not far above the current market, that the first whoosh out of the hole for these markets could be of the about 40%, and we think it could be rapid and like a thin air rally, you know, where it just unleashes, it changes its nature. And that, on a percent basis, I think that may be the most exciting place to be next year once our numbers are triggered in terms of, one, speed of the move and the percent of the move. Mm-hmm. And that combination should be quite headline-grabbing. And also we'll broaden out the commodity upside that we've seen this past year, which we saw in oil, we've seen in copper, seen it in gold, and so forth. But when you take the food commodities, and I would throw cattle in there too, you throw them upstairs, suddenly you've got a full chorus. You don't just have half the markets moving up, taking the Bloomberg Commodity Index up, but you've got the full force. And I think that's about to happen.
Yeah, well, certainly if the commodity complex continues to rise, especially the food items and so forth, those are things that really come into play in the CPI, the government's numbers. It would seem to go well with your other viewpoint concerning the interest rates. and the debt markets, right? You're seeing
debt markets next year. In fact, the charts, if you look at an annual momentum chart of, let's say, the German bonds or the Japanese government bonds, and they look equally as ripe to collapse as the grains do to explode. And the fact that they're both postured in the same way, equals and opposites, almost makes the point. It's when the food commodities go up, suddenly it becomes obvious. You know, people can ignore a copper rise because they don't eat copper. But when all of a sudden the price of grains goes up 40% in a heartbeat, first leg, that is, and so forth, then it gets your attention, globally speaking. It gets the public attention and government's attention, which puts a, you know, it's a shin kick to the bond markets, that's for sure. The excuse that, well, we need to get some inflation before we can, well, you got it.
Yeah, be careful what you ask for, right?
Yeah, and, careful what you ask for.
Yeah, well, for sure. On the commodity play, I mean, one ETF that you've talked about before, and I think you've just recently done some more work on it, is MOO, M-O-O is the symbol. I guess it's agricultural chemicals,
yeah, agricultural
as well as
industry,
grains.
That's the beauty of it. And it has really launched this year. We went long, at the same time we went long EEM, the emerging markets, back in January. And MOO has had a heck of a move. I can't tell you exact percent right now. But MOO is comprised of not the commodities themselves, but companies that service the agricultural industry, everything from Monsanto to the fertilizer companies, even Deere Tractor and so forth. But things that are related to servicing the agricultural industry. And these stocks didn't wait for grains to take off before they went up. They had a big move this year. And I think it's, in effect, a forestatement of what, you know, some investors see as what's coming in the grains themselves. I think it's a forewarning. So, yeah, we like that sector of the stock market, and we think you could probably be long the MOO, the agricultural industry stocks, as a basket, although we like the fertilizer stocks more, particularly potash, which we went long a while ago, and be short the S&P simultaneously and make good money on the spread.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where you're effectively market neutral, so to speak, but you're betting on the difference widening where MOO is favored and S&P is disfavored.
Right, so you could buy MOO and sell and buy SH, I suppose. ETFs,
yeah,
that'd be one simple way to play it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I'm looking at MOO now, and I see it was trading starting the year, about, I guess this is a 52-week range here. Mm-hmm. It was at 51.09 a year ago. It's at 61.54 now. So pretty good move. You think it still has a lot more to it, possibly?
I think it does, but it will have downside with the market because it is part of the market, so to speak. It's not totally separate. Therefore, if the S&P dropped, though, you know, 7-8% at some point, which we actually kind of think might happen in the first quarter, I wouldn't be shocked that the MOO pulls back, you know, about half of that. But again, what you're betting on here at this point in time is not the net trend to MOO, but the spread relationship.
The spread, right.
These stocks, just simply, if the S&P goes into a bear market, I don't just mean a quick correction, but an actual bear market, then MOO resists it quite well. And especially so once the grains get moving. At that point, it'll give MOO even more solidity, if you know what I mean. So I like that as a spread right now.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense to me. Michael, with about a minute left, just getting back to Freeport-McMoRan, do you think that one has got some more on the upside? It's made quite a move already this year. The easy money's already been made, perhaps.
No, I don't think so. I think the breakout you just had that took you up to 18-plus from our breakout point was 14 on momentum, and you just surged to 18 rapidly. I looked at it this morning, and again, and with an attempt to come up with an idea of where might its first major objective be, and I could easily see it seeing a double from here before you hit anything substantial in terms of resistance.
In the next 6 months or a year,
Well, I don't know about that, but the next year or so. And that is a stock I would not treat as coincident with the S&P. While the MOO might back up with the S&P to some extent, spread still work favoring the MOO, I think that something like Freeport-McMoRan would even care what the S&P is doing.
Yeah, could be. It's got gold and copper both. So
yes, right.
We'll have to leave it go at that, Michael. Thank you so much. I look forward to talking to you next week if you're available and your outlook for 2018 on the major plate tectonics. So thanks again for being with us. Always a pleasure having you, Michael. All right, folks. Well, we do have to go to break now, but don't go away. Michael Pinto will be with us. He believes, I think you'll find a lot of agreement with Michael Oliver, Pento's view that we're heading to much higher interest rates and much higher rates of inflation that go along with it are very much in tune with Michael Oliver's views as well. So don't go away. We'll be right back with Michael Pento.
Noble Resources Corp. trades on the OTCQX under the symbol NSRPF and on the TSX Venture Exchange under NVO. Its flagship assets are located in the Karratha region of Western Australia, where they are currently drilling and trenching their Perdies Reward Project. In addition, Noble has partnered with Sumitomo Mining Corporation to advance its Beaton's Creek Gold Project toward production. With over $70 million in cash and strong shareholder support from the likes of Kirkland Lake Gold, Noble is well on its way to establishing itself as one of the top junior explorers and developers in Australia.
Bonterra Resources, a Canadian exploration company, is aggressively expanding its high-grade Gladiator gold deposit in Quebec, Canada. In 2017, Bonterra raised $40 million and attracted strategic investors Eric Sprott, Kinross, Kirkland Lake Gold, and New York-based VanEck Gold Fund. Bonterra is focused on updating its 43-101 resource model in 2018 and will incorporate up to an additional 100,000-plus meters of drilling where the dimensions of the Gladiator gold deposit has been expanded to date nearly 500%. Bonterra trades in Canada under the symbol BTR and in the U.S. under BONXF.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.